Good evening. My name is Christina Freeman. I am a lifelong resident of Jersey City, a police officer for 6 years, a mom, an honor student at NJCU. I've seen the struggles here in Jersey City and have experienced them too. I come as a servant and a voice for the people. My platform is based upon youth services, public safety, and affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner O'Day.
County Commissioner Bill O'Day. I'm also a lifelong resident of Jersey City. Started by Dickinson High School, moved down to the Lincoln Park area, and have lived there for the last 52 years. I have 35 years of legislative experience, 8 as a member of the Jersey City Council, and now 27 as a county commissioner. I additionally am the executive director of a not-for-profit that has worked on projects that contain over 750 units of real affordable housing, made grants and loans to small businesses, including during COVID, made grants to small businesses before any other EDC did. And in fact, from that role, I got the County of Hudson to initiate a program where we made grants available to businesses in Jersey City within a few weeks of the COVID pandemic happening and the shutdown occurring. I love Jersey City. I pride myself on getting things done. Throughout my career, I'm about, don't listen to what I promise you I'm gonna do, check what I've done, whether it's public safety, whether it's parks, whether it's helping small businesses, whether it's helping people that are homeless and creating a step-down unit during COVID across the street from Christ Hospital, which now is threatened with closure. That step-down unit saved thousands of lives that we otherwise would have lost, lives of individuals who were able to move into that facility because we freed up beds in the emergency rooms and in other parts of the hospital for people that really needed the care. I'm here to work for you. I'm here to serve you. I'm available 24/7. I'm the mayor of the entire town. And as I've said before, when I'm mayor, there'll be a mayor's office in City Hall at 280 Grove Street, and there'll be a mayor's office at the Hub on MLK. Because whether you're on the south side or the north side or the east side, I'm going to be readily accessible for you to help you with whatever problem you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Musab Ali.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Musab Ali. I'm running to be the next mayor here in Jersey City. I'm a lifelong resident of Jersey City. I moved here when I was 3 years old, and I went to public schools here. I went to PSX in the Heights. I went to Academy One Middle School right next to Snyder High School, and then I went to McNair Academic for high school. When I was 20 years old, this city elected me as the youngest elected official in city history to serve on the Board of Education. By the time I was 23, I was elected as the board president, overseeing a budget of $814 million. During my tenure on the school board, we canceled student lunch debt, we increased the minimum wage for teachers, and we fixed water fountains that had been shut down for 16 years, ever since I was in third grade. And so I understand what it means to go through a system to identify the problems and to try to solve them. When I was 23 years old, I was diagnosed with stage 4 blood cancer. And I said to myself, if I had a second chance, I wanted to dedicate it towards public service. And so I went off to law school, finished up my career, and came back and realized that so many of the people who had my back during my darkest moments could no longer afford to be here. And so we're running on a platform to make the city more affordable. That means building more housing, especially more affordable housing, building a fast and free city-run bus system without increasing your taxes. That also means having a vision for what the business community can look like here in Jersey City. And to me, that's a vision that has finance, life sciences, and tech. And that is what I think the future of Jersey City can be. Thank you.
Governor Jim McGreevy.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to the chamber. I want to say thank you to HUD Post and my fellow candidates. You know, for many of us, we see Jersey City at a critical crossroads. We see the development that occurred downtown, but we see for many families, they simply haven't benefited from that largesse, that development. So for me, my commitment is to understand the importance of, while recognizing the development downtown, that it's been relatively uneven throughout the entirety of the city. And part and parcel of that, we have certain basic challenges. One, our fiscal governance. our fiscal health. If you take time, and there's no reason why you should, to look at the last four audits of the municipality or of the school board, they're egregious, red flags, inappropriate expenditures, over encumbrances. And so the first point is if we're going to have a world-class city, we have to manage ourselves with discipline, with rigor and accountability. Second is education. If you want a world-class city, you have to have a world-class educational system. And we have some great teachers in schools, but what concerns me is the performance. In terms of third grade, only 39% of the children in third grade can read at age-appropriate level. That means 61% of the children can't read based on state assessment scores. And for eighth grade mathematics, only 10% could pass that test. So education is another area. In addition, that we have to look to safe and clean streets, we have to look to public safety, and we have to look to affordability. Building housing that people from Jersey City, who've been here from generation to generation, can sustain and to purchase. And lastly, it's also our infrastructure, whether it's New Jersey Transit, whether it's PATH, whether it's bus systems, to understand the importance of the interconnectedness of our city with our transportation system. Thank you.
All right, our first question is going to go to Bill O'Day. In some respects, Jersey City is not the tale of two cities, but of seven or eight cities. New residents, long-timers, major corporations, small businesses, and migrant populations from many parts of the world. Who is Jersey City for, and how do you balance the various needs of these sometimes competing constituencies?
Well, Jersey City needs to be for all of those groups, not for one group over another group. You know, I've been on the south side of the city, and my district is predominantly the south side of Jersey City. So I'm somebody who deals with people on a daily basis who are being evicted from their apartment, who have to be put up in hotels and motels sometimes because there's nowhere else to go. In fact, tonight, if you want to come after here to my headquarters at 1590 JFK Boulevard, there's a young man staying there because his stay has run out through every program that we have. So I represent, and the city represents, all people. But I've always believed that our first responsibility are those who can't speak for themselves, whether they're poor, whether they're our children, whether they're our seniors. And as an elected official, I always put speaking for them first, because other voices are easily heard. Other voices can get to meetings and pack meetings and have their voices loud and clear. So we represent all. And even on the issue of our immigrants that who are not here legally. You know, 2 weeks ago, I had a meet with a young lady who's facing deportation because she reported a domestic violence complaint against the person that she was living with. So the mayor of the city, this city represents everyone. But as someone who's put 35 years in elected office, first and foremost, I want to always be the voice for those people who are hard to be heard on their own, even if it's to my own detriment.
Thanks. Masab.
If some of you have seen our posters around town, you'll notice that we say that we are building a Jersey City that works for all of us. To me, this city is built by people who have taken risks, people who are new immigrants, people that have built this city, people who have built the culture here. And I think people often talk about new residents coming here as if people of Jersey City are not welcoming. I mean, this is a city that's the home of Ellis Island. We've always welcomed new people here. But what's frustrated so many people is they've seen the wealth that's being created and feel like they're not getting a piece of it. And so to me, what that means is we need to make sure that everyone in the city feels included in what's happening. Look, there's a statistic I want to put out for you. It's really damaging for Jersey City. Only 17% of the people who live in Jersey City work in Jersey City. That's one of the lowest levels of any city across the country. And now some of you may say, hey, there's no jobs in Jersey City. But actually, 101,000 people leave Jersey City for work, but 99,000 people commute to Jersey City for work. That's why the roads are always backed up. And so for us, we want to make sure that the city's affordable. We want to end exclusionary zoning so we can build more housing. We want to build a fast and free bus system that connects all the people across the city, make sure people have a reliable way to get to work. And we also want to make sure that we can end the corruption that has taken place in the city. We're the only campaign, we don't take any money from city vendors or city contractors, to make sure that we're independent and accountable only to you. Thank you.
Jim.
So when I first thought about running for office, one of the things that drove me was the work that I do every day. And I have the privilege of working with young men and women that are coming home from prison or from jail, veterans that are coming home from multiple deployments, and folks that are coming back from addiction treatment. And I still take a caseload, and sometimes a source of joy and sometimes a source of aggravation. But one thing that I clearly saw is for young men and women coming home, Jersey City had so outpriced them from the ability to live. So in a couple areas. One, when we look at all this development going on in Jersey City, when you look to see who's doing the building, it's not folks from Jersey City, let alone young African-American or Latino men and women. And one of the things that we've worked to do is to provide skills and provide a program called P2A with the laborers, Pathways to Apprenticeship, to get young men and young women, as does Bill with his program, to get them into the quarter, to get them working. But what I also see is, and I think we all share this, or many of us share this in the room, is that we have to make government work. We have to access these individuals to general assistance, to TANF, to vocational responsibility, and to critical services. That applies to those individuals coming home. It applies to those people looking for a second chance, and also particularly to the mentally ill. Thank you.
Christina?
This is the city of the have and the have-nots. I grew up in the Greenville section on Dwight Street, and I know the story very well. I went to school downtown, St. Anthony's High School, which gave me the opportunity to see a different way of life. It's unfortunate that to this day, some of the things that I saw back then is still now. Under my administration, I want a city that is for everyone, a city that works for everyone, a city that everyone has the resources and where they can thrive. And it's not something that's impossible, a city of opportunity. I believe that we have the talent here in Jersey City to make Jersey City exactly what we all envision it to be. I've watched my friends and family move out of the city because they could no longer afford to live here. I myself have experienced being displaced from places just by being priced out. And under my administration, we will do better. We will support each and every community here and make sure that all the voices of the people are accounted for. Thank you.
Commissioner.
You went first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next question starts with Masab, right?
Yeah.
Transportation remains one of our most important issues. At the same time our population is growing, business areas are shifting, and the demand for on-demand delivery services is increasing with e-bikes. Streets are being narrowed. For example, four-lane roads are becoming two-lane roads. How do you get a handle on traffic and parking that is actively impeding residents and the free flow of commerce?
Great. So I think the first thing I want to talk about here is the traffic safety division. Presently in Jersey City, there is no traffic safety division. If you drive in Bayonne or you drive in Union City, drivers drive differently than they do in Jersey City. And the reason is because here we don't enforce the law. So we need to make sure we have a traffic enforcement division so people are not driving like it's the Wild West. But the second thing for me is making sure that we can build a sustainable bus system that allows people to move throughout the city. Again, fixed route transit is always going to be more efficient than having what is effectively an Uber system that exists right now in Jersey City. If any of you guys have seen VIA, those purple vans that exist, every time someone gets on a VIA, they pay $2 and they think that that's what the ride costs. But in reality, every ride costs $15, $2 from the rider, but $13 from the taxpayers. Every year, we are paying via $7.8 million, and it is not an efficient service. But I think when it comes to these e-bikes and efficiency there, we need to look at models like New York City, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco. What they did is they made sure that the regulations were enforced on the companies, that all the e-bikes were registered, that the people who were riding the e-bikes were wearing the appropriate vests. Now, they tried to do the same thing as Hoboken, and where it failed is they put the fines on everyday working people, as opposed to putting the fines on the companies. And you need to make sure you hold the companies accountable for the actions that their employees are taking.
Jim.
Thanks. Couple things. I just want to piggyback. Clearly, we need a traffic enforcement division. I would also bring back the motorcycle bikes. So critically important, particularly in terms of navigating between bikes and some of the challenges. In addition to that, we also need to understand the importance of community policing. People need to see a police officer in their neighborhood, in their community, on a regular basis to develop and sustain that trust. In terms of transportation itself, we need to work assiduously with the PATH, and that is increase traffic, increase provision of service at nighttime, on weekends, as opposed to the loop through Hoboken. We should look at explore the opportunity for BRT on in terms of the possibility on the boulevard, and then obviously the expansion of light rail. And we have to turn Journal Square into the state-of-the-art transportation hub. We have to work cooperatively with the Port Authority because we need to rebuild Journal Square. Some people have suggested it's among the fourth busiest bus terminal in the Eastern Seaboard. We need to build up the idea of Journal Square. And then as to e-bikes, I entirely agree. They need to be licensed, they need to be registered, and we need to codify a specific set of fines so that individuals will receive a fine and then be graduated upwards until they eventually lose their bike if they fail to comply with the municipal ordinances. Thank you. That was my uncle. Thank you. Those Marines.
Well, as a police officer here, we see a lot of issues with the bikes and the scooters. And, you know, I'm not totally opposed to them. However, there has to be rules and regulations that have to be enforced and followed in terms of the people who own these devices. A part of the root cause is the stores that sell them, making sure that there's compliance and rules that they are following, licensing for those who utilize these devices on the roadway, and again, enforcement, making sure that summonses are being issued for these violations. The transit, I understand that transit sucks here in Jersey City, and one of the ways that I intend to combat that is creating a green bus line, totally electric. It's funding that's through the government that will pretty much fund this project, and is just better for our environment. We can control how often it runs and pretty much create city jobs for people who are looking, you know, to work within the city. That's one way. Just making sure that the roadways are a little less congested, in addition to a toll system, which I'll elaborate more a little bit later.
Bill.
So first, bring back the motorcycle squad. The motorcycles exist. They're stored in a building in Marion Gardens. All we need is to assign the officers to begin to ride them. We also should bring back traffic enforcement and put some officers on bicycles. But traffic enforcement, I think everyone agrees we need to do. As it relates to e-bikes, especially commercial e-bikes, I think we also agree. They need to be regulated, they need to be registered, and the businesses owners are the ones that definitely need to be held accountable. But they need to all have lights on them, they need to have the proper helmets, they need to have an ID number so we know who it is when we have any problems. For bus transportation, when they tried to get rid of the 440 shopper, I stood tall, worked with the community, and we forced New Jersey Transit to step in and keep that line running. When they were going to get rid of the 80 line, again, I stood strong, I stood with the community, we stood up, and we made New Jersey Transit continue to operate it. So I have a good working relationship with transit, and whatever we need to expand it is fine. I'm a little intrigued with Musab's idea of a free bus service, but I like Isles, because Isles actually has an income way of deciding whether people pay, so I would look into that. With PATH, I've already started a conversation with the Port Authority about ending the Hoboken run-through. It makes no sense on weekends. There's more user ridership of it, so I think PATH, bus service, traffic enforcement, and lastly, bring back red light cameras and speeding cameras by schools.
What's up?
I went first.
You went first.
He'll
take another 90 seconds.
I can respond. Happy to respond.
This question will be for Jim McGreevy. Police response times have increased to as long as two hours in one documented case. Potential causes for are short staffing shortages, an overwhelmed 911 system, resource allocation, and traffic. Many small business owners are concerned about their own safety at work. How will you improve these response times?
It's a great question. It's hard to do it, candidly, in the allotted period of time, but I'll take a shot at it. The first thing is we have to have CompStat. And CompStat in New York City, you have complete transparency of all crime data. And we're going to bring that back in terms of Jersey City. Every block, every neighborhood should be aware fully in order to be accountable for the crime statistics. Two is data accuracy. We have to require regular UCR updates in order to provide this information to our neighborhoods. And then in addition to that, we also need to establish command and integrity within our police department. Bluntly, we need a change at the top of the police department, and we need to sever the fire department from the police department. Community policing will be so critically important. We have to get back to the idea that we develop relationships of trust between the community, between the neighborhood, and our police officers, which is so critically important. And then in addition, professional standards. When I was mayor of Woodbridge, I was proud of the fact that we had the first nationally certified, nationally credentialed police department in the state of New Jersey. And that sets clear standards of behavior, best practices and protocols that police have to adhere to develop a stronger relationship between the police department and the community. And lastly, we also need to work thoughtfully with juveniles and mental health oversight to understand there are those individuals that have specific, unique needs that may fall out of the bandwidth of traditional policing.
Christina?
The police department is short-staffed. In terms of dispatch time and allocating police to those calls, we need to hire enough staff to cover the call volume. For those of you who do not know, I believe year-to-date we have over 200,000 calls that come through that has already came through Jersey City. So in that, we are severely short on manpower, specifically in the dispatch unit and within the police department. I intend to make sure that we hire the right amount of people to handle the amount of calls that we get here in Jersey City. In addition to just community policing, I think that overall when the police are out in the community building relationships, it kind of deters a lot of the issues that we have within the community, and also just build a better relationship of understanding of what it is that we do as police officers within the community. Violence interrupters, that's also a good asset that I intend to utilize in terms of just deterring some of the violence that we have here within the community and centers to resolve conflict amongst neighbors. Thank you.
Bill?
I'm glad it only took Jim McGreevy 23 months to come to the conclusion I did when I announced I was running for mayor, which is we have to have a separate police department and fire department. What's been operating for the past 12 years has been a disaster. It has to change. As it relates specifically to policing, day one, eliminate these fixed posts. Sticking a car and having the lights flash for 8 hours serves no one's purpose, unless you're within about 3 feet of where that car is, because that car can't respond to an offense that occurs one block away. It makes no sense. They had it in New York. It doesn't work here. Get rid of it. Secondly, better utilize, first, better staff and train 911, but better utilize the problem we have, which is get rid of over-response. Have you ever seen a car accident with five police cars? Have you ever seen a minor offense with four or five police cars? Why are four or five police cars at those types of offenses? Someone needs to be redirecting them back out onto patrol to deal with other offenses. They're not rocket science issues that we're dealing with. Better deployment, definitely community policing, better utilization of urban enterprise zone dollars to put more patrols within the special improvement districts and within the business communities throughout it. Those are the things that we need to do to get our policing back on track, definitely community policing, but eliminate the standing cars, stop the over assignment of vehicles to simple offenses that only need one officer to be there.
Jim, did you want 30 seconds to respond?
No, I just wanted to echo on 911. I mean, 911 went down for an hour and 47 minutes, ostensibly because someone, they were transferring the 911 facilities, and at the old facility, somebody didn't turn on the air conditioner in proximate to the compressor, and the 911 system went down. So obviously, we have to be concerned about 911, and clearly the fixed post is an absurdity. There's literally an individual police officer is standing there in a fixed post, and if he's charged or he or she sees a crime, they have to go back to get authorization.
Thanks. Thank Ms. Saab, did you want to pick up the line of questioning?
Sure. Look, I think we're broadly in agreement here on this stage. I think the current police system is not working. I think specifically as it relates to EMS, we have one of the most underpaid EMS systems in the entire state of New Jersey. Think about that. Despite the fact that we are one of the densest and largest cities in the entire state, we pay our people below market. And so you get what you pay for, right? There are people who are not responding to these crimes, people who are not picking up the police department. But I think more broadly, when it comes to public safety starts with trust. So that means that we have to publish statistics and we have to talk about what's happening in our police department. If you went today and you look at the Police Accountability Scorecard, this is a nonprofit organization that looks at all the different police departments across the country, and you look at the statistics in Jersey City, this is what it would tell you. If you're a black person in Jersey City, you are 14.4 times more, and if you're a Latino person in Jersey City, you are 2.9 times more likely to be arrested for nonviolent offense as compared to a white person. And that is the reality in our police system. So we have to make sure we are talking to our police officers, training them, and enforcing real community policing where people actually feel safe. Look, I'll be honest, when I see a police car behind me, is my first sensation safety or is it fear? And I think for a lot of people, we need to make sure that we build these bonds with police officers to the point that Bill and Jim were making, right? Like, don't have these fixed posts, actually have them walk around their neighborhood. But the thing is, you can't expect officers to do something that the mayor won't do themselves. And so for me, it's important that I walk up and down MLK, that I'm visible at Ocean, so our police officers know, hey, the mayor is doing this and I can do this too. Thank you.
Thanks. The next line of questions starts with Christina. Government has not always been a strong partner with business. For example, in high growth states, a new business can open within a month. But here, it can take 6 to 12 months, with new businesses first paying thousands of dollars of fees to the government before they sell the first product or give away the first service. One of our members actually almost went bankrupt before they could get their doors open. How do we fix the permitting process? How do we become a more business-friendly city? And how do we particularly help small businesses and entrepreneurs?
Thank you. I come from the background of entrepreneurship as well. I started off with a cleaning service and now a children's play company that's called Primary Sensory Play. So I understand the struggle. Just making the system a lot easier for people to, or business owners to have access to, create a platform where they can go on and figure out what licensings that they need in addition to what the fees will cost them. Just simplify the whole process. The business portal, give out grants, microloans, and also grant writing services to these business owners so that they don't go bankrupt before they actually sell their first products. Open up some of the commercial spaces in which the city owns and allow these business owners to utilize those spaces for a certain amount of time until they're able to create enough capital to where they can support themselves within the space. Just simple things, pop-up shops, more exposure to the community so that they can actually get customers into their spaces. Another thing I wanted to incorporate is a program called City Perks, to where it incentivizes citizens or civic engagement to where they can get access to additional resources.
Bill.
So having been an executive director for a decade of a not-for-profit that prime purpose is to assist small business. I think I know how to best get it done. Grants and loans to small businesses, especially minority and women-owned businesses, is done day one. The city gets a good amount of urban enterprise zone dollars, and those dollars should be deployed that way. In fact, as mayor, I'm going to work with the executive director of Jersey City's EDC to figure out how to expand what they have. Jersey City's EDC should ultimately become a CDFI, bringing tens of millions of dollars of additional funds in to be able to loan out. At Elizabeth Development Company, I've been able to get a couple of million dollars from the state of New Jersey that I've been able to help minority businesses with, including JC Gelato, Jersey City business, now located in Terminal A in a small space at the new terminal, the best business that's operating in that space. So I know how to do that, and I know how to help businesses better than anybody I think that's on here because of the experience that I have. As it relates to how long it takes to open, that's ridiculous. When I'm mayor and needing expediters, it's embarrassing to me that people need an expediter to get a permit moved or to get a CO done. If a business needs to open, we've got to do everything we can to move the paperwork along. And if it's not being moved along, come see me in the mayor's office. And if I have to, I'll personally drive over. Well, it depends what day of the week. I might just have to go down the hall on MLK after I'm walking MLK to make sure that that permit or CO gets issued.
Thanks. Musab.
That's my aunt, or probably my niece. Probably my niece, based on the age of that voice.
Look, I've talked to small business owners, and what they tell me is their number one obstacle is actually not money. It's time. So I want to do an exercise with you, if you'll forgive me for having my phone out. If you Google Jersey City open a small business, and you scroll down, there's a page that talks about the website about applications and forms. And there's a wizard here. It's a business licensing guide that's supposed to help you in figuring out how to open your small business. Right, so let's say I want to open up a barbershop. So I'm going to click a barbershop here. I wish you guys could see my screen. But we're going to go here to the small business page. And the first thing it talks about is trying to get a loan. So it says, for more information, visit jcsmallbusiness.com/loan. Here's the thing. That website link is broken. Now you go back. And if you go back and you're trying to find, if you're trying to find information about zoning, it says a zoning review is required to open your business. Click here to apply for a zoning review. No surprise, the form is no longer available. Then if you go back here again and you're looking for the rules and regulations, so now you go on this website, the Business Licensing Guide, you're saying, hey, click here to learn more about the rules and regulations that pertain to Jersey City businesses. That also doesn't work. Look, the reality is this is a symptom of a problem of a city that does not welcome business. And what we want to do is build a one-stop shop that is actually efficient to allow people to open up their businesses and to make sure that City Hall is working at the speed of businesses. We want to make sure we modernize the system and actually have it online where you can open up your business while sitting in your home. Thank you.
Jim.
Three things. One, on permitting. We have to distinguish between someone who's applying for their residential kitchen and development. So what I would suggest humbly, which is what we did in Woodbridge, is we had two tracks. We had tracks for domestic home improvement, and then we had a separate track where individuals who were engaging in development would literally pay for the developer, pay for the architect, pay for the engineer to do the review of the basic plan. So you had two tracks. You had a track for permitting for the small, for the family, and a track for development, which was paid. The second track was paid by the developer. Secondly, and I think we've all alluded to this, is that we have to help support small businesses in Jersey City. When I had the opportunity to serve as governor, basically what we did is we twinned minority and women-owned businesses with majority-owned businesses. And basically the goal of that was is that if you would submit a proposal, but you would twin with a minority woman-owned businesses, you would receive more points in the consideration of your respective RFP proposal. So you have to provide incentives to bring in minority woman-owned businesses. You know, one of the frustrating things that I saw in terms of Jersey City employment and training is that time and time again, one, there were not folks from Jersey City building those buildings, but there weren't Jersey City businesses contributing to the lifeblood of those buildings. And lastly, I think, as Emery said, if we're going to have a world-class city, we have to be in the business of business. And that is, we have to track businesses to our community.
This question is for Bill. Increasing taxes on businesses result in higher rent. consumer prices, and cost pass-throughs on services. Many of our largest employers are investing elsewhere. For example, J.P. Morgan Chase now has more employees in Texas than they do in New Jersey and New York combined. How do we fund the city while keeping people and businesses from being pushed out?
So the reality is we're a high-tax state, and it's not a city problem. It's as much, if not more, a state problem. So the state has to address that. We have to pay our costs. We have budget problems. We have real budget problems. You know, if the state of New Jersey corrects the funding error with our schools, which deprives us of $250 million a year, and gives us that $250 million a year back, we may debate or argue whether to reduce or eliminate a payroll tax. But that payroll tax was imposed, and the chamber should have been stronger and should be a strong advocate now in giving us our $250 million a year back to try to help address that. So those are the kind of things that I think, not only from a mayoral leadership, but from the chamber leadership you need to do. Fees from the state level, payroll taxes. Look, we have an urban enterprise zone. From the retail market, we should be expanding our retail market because we're able to offer to individuals a 50% reduced sales tax. Are we marketing enough to bring those type of businesses into Jersey City? We are bringing a Target right now down onto the highway. So there is some progress made with that. Again, if you build in a UEZ, you'll have a zero sales tax when you build that building. That's an incentive. I think we need to market to bring new businesses in. I think we need to work to get the state to give us our money back for our schools and then talk about how we can reduce or eliminate the payroll tax.
Sob?
Look, I think this is a good opportunity, I think, to Bill's point, to talk about the payroll tax. But, I mean, largely what Bill has said is accurate, right? When it comes to businesses and the taxes that they're facing, the vast majority of them are based on state incentives. The biggest, I think, miss that the state has, when we had the NJ Grow tax credit that allowed a lot of businesses and companies to come here to Jersey City, and now that that's expired, a lot of businesses are leaving. And so you look at the vacancy rate of a lot of our offices, I mean, it is honestly pretty dramatic, right? You have some office buildings in Jersey City that are almost completely empty. There's one that's being operated and just really being sustained by Bank of America that's going to exit. But let's talk about what happened with this payroll tax. So when I was on the Board of Education, I remember literally asking the mayor over and over again, how much money's in the payroll tax? How much money's in the payroll tax? And you can see the headlines about the mayor stonewalling the Board of Education because there's a lack of enforcement. There are so many businesses that are not actually paying their payroll tax. And if that payroll tax was paid, the residents of Jersey City would actually have to pay less taxes because of the dramatic increase that's happened because of the school system. But the reason that I think the city did not fight hard enough against the state of New Jersey was because the mayor was running for governor. And a lot of that money that was coming from Jersey City was going to other schools across the state of New Jersey. And so the mayor made a political decision. Instead of fighting for the children of Jersey City, he fought for the children across New Jersey. And I think that's wrong, because as the mayor of this town, you should be having your residents' best interest first.
Jim?
We have to get our fiscal house in order. Part of it is, I believe, we have to go back to zero-based budgeting. We can't assume in perpetuity that the cost of operating Jersey City municipal government is going to ever increase year after year after year. One of the things that I did as mayor of Woodbridge is basically zero-based budgeting, bring it back to zero, and then justify it to the expenditure division by division, department by department. Second, we have to close a $94 million shortfall, and we have to reduce $219 million in deferred charges. And we also have to begin to cut waste and duplication, which I think is critically important, whether it's the Pompidou or other, if you will, projects. And then in addition to that, whether it's resolving $10 million in appeals, modernizing tax collection, but we also have to grow our tax base. And that means we have to attract businesses to Jersey City, which is so critically important. As Musab said, when you look at the financial district on the waterfront, you have upwards of 47% of that building almost empty. And whether it's AI, whether it's transportation, whether it's logistics, whether it's the film industry, whether the health industry, we have to attract businesses to Jersey City. So part of what I see as a critical core component of being mayor is not only recognizing that, yes, we've had this residential development, but we have to have commercial and industrial development. At the end of the day, commercial and industrial development doesn't require intensive policing or schools, but it pays property taxes.
Christina?
We have to, well, the administration now has done a poor job with staying within the budget guidelines. We are in a structured deficit in which we are in the red. So, you know, when things cost, someone has to pay it. So therefore it falls on the business owners and the property tax owners. So in that, we have to make sure that we're staying within budget. Not only that, cut unnecessary spending and duplicate spending, put a hold on any unnecessary projects that may put a strain on these businesses that are here, and then also make sure that the corporations are paying their share. From my understanding, that there's a lot of taxes that have not been paid over years by many of the corporations that do business here in Jersey City. Not only that, I want to make sure that funding goes back into these businesses. So Jersey City First, any contracts that the city comes up with, it would be Jersey City Businesses First, in addition to making sure that these businesses are showcased on our city platform so that they can get extra eyes on their businesses so that they can keep their doors open. Thank you.
Our next round of questions starts with Masab. Many candidates have raised issues with ongoing development policies with the Pompidou and the transformation of Journal Square serving as poster children. By the same token, it is these same developments that bring in a lot of economic growth and outside money via tourism and shopping, right? So what does healthy development look like for you?
This is a great question. I think that we can actually look to Newark to answer some of these questions. I actually, when I graduated from law school, one of the first things I did is I wrote a paper on equitable development. And I looked at Jersey City, I looked at Newark, and I looked at Paterson. One of the things that's most interesting in Newark is they have taken city property and city land and redeveloped it in a way that can be useful to generate rent for everyday residents. I'll give you an example of that project. Right now in Newark, there's a project in partnership with the Urban League and their community land bank where you can buy a two-family home right now in Newark for $260,000. The rent that you will get from that tenant is going to pay your mortgage. And then all you have to do is cover the taxes. I mean, these are models that you can look at where there's equitable growth that's taking place. When it comes to the Pompidou, look, the reality is Jersey City just cannot afford that project. I mean, forget the upfront fees. We have given out a tax abatement that costs $150 million upfront. But on the back end of this, we're talking about an operational management of over $30 million a year. There is no way Jersey City can sustain that. And so to me, look, if this is a project that's being funded by the state, that's great. But if Jersey City taxpayers have to pay that bill on top of all the other bills that we're paying right now, that's not something that we can afford. At the same time, I do think that we have a campaign that is willing to go out on the road and attract new businesses and new ideas to come here to Jersey City to show them that we're an innovative place that is willing to take in investors who want to make the city a better place.
Jim.
You know, when you look at development of Jersey City and when you look at downtown, I mean, one of the things that I'm concerned about is that Jersey City, the different neighborhoods, the different wards of Jersey City represent their best traditions, their best history. And clearly we want to see increased investment all across Jersey City where appropriate. But we have to make sure that the planning process doesn't simply focus in on a building, but we focus in on a neighborhood. We focus in on the bodega, on the early childhood education, on the necessity for schools. One of the challenges that I see that's so critically important is that we haven't planned well. The fact that after building, after building, after building goes up, then someone begins to decide, well, what are we going to do about school children? What are we going to do about infrastructure? What are we going to do about streets? So for me, what I see is so critically important is that development is overplayed with infrastructure, with schools, with community. And I think we haven't done that. We've looked at buildings as atomized units. We haven't looked at buildings as building neighborhoods. And to the point of the Pompidou, we can ill afford, of all the major priorities that Jersey City should be confronting, one of them is not the Pompidou Museum. Yes, we should be investing in the arts, but we should be investing in local arts that have sustained the community for so long. But again, it's neighborhoods, it's planning, and it's understanding the importance of allowing neighborhood interaction to develop a plan that meets all the neighborhood needs.
Christina.
Healthy development for me is development that includes the community. We have to make sure that what's coming here is making sense and that's going to benefit the community. Greenville is an open canvas. I would love to pretty much revitalize the Greenville section and incentivize businesses coming to open their doors there. Our businesses are supposed to support the economy here, and anyone that's looking to do business in Jersey City, I want to make sure that it is a reflection of the community because our youth are the ones that need it. Incentivize these businesses and for them opening their doors to the youth so that the youth can have somewhere safe to go and also be able to provide an income and help to support their family. Thank you.
Bill.
So how do we help development? We help it by making it do what our community and our city needs. 20% inclusionary affordable housing. I know how to make it work. It's going to work in Bayfront. It's going to work at 703 North Avenue. Two Aspire projects, state tax credits, low-income housing tax credits, and other incentives to make the economics work. We desperately need real affordable housing, and I know how to make those projects work. And I know how to work with the developers to make sure it gives the city what they want. You know, a couple of people spoke about giving local opportunities. Pull the file on the new Frank Guarini courthouse. You know how you make sure local minority businesses, contractors, and vendors get work there? You require the GC of that project to give you the list of who they're going to use, and then you make sure they use it. Don't just give them some points for it. Give me the list, give me the names, and then I make sure that they get those contracts. Pull that project. You'll see they exceeded the 10% set aside that they were required to have there. So I understand development. I know how to work with developers, but make sure at the end of the day that the project is best for Jersey City. And part of that is including the community, and part of it is having real community benefit agreements that are developed not by City Hall, but with the pure interaction and input of the people that live in the neighborhoods that are impacted.
All right, this question is for Jim. Jersey City systems, including their power grid, power sewer, water sewers, and roadways are in bad shape. How do you work to ensure the infrastructure stability and cost effectiveness as we grow while making sure that all neighborhoods receive proper attention?
Great question. We have 220 miles of roads, of sewers and water. 50% of our pipes are over 100 years of age. To retrofit those pipes would cost approximately $6.2 billion, which is a staggering amount of money. So obviously, if you've increased the demand, you increase the requirement for capacity by 40%, and don't have the concurrent requisite expansion, you're going to have stress fractures. You're going to have breaks. One of the things that I had done previously when I served as mayor is we'd have smart pigs. Literally every 3 years, we'd put a smart pig, it's a small computer with a camera, on the line through every single pipe, every 3 years. And we were able to identify where there was a stress fracture. And the reason why we did that is because where we saw a stress fracture, we would insert a plastic sleeve that would elongate the length of time by which the infrastructure could survive. So for me, what I see is, one, is the importance of connecting infrastructure requirements to developers. Part and parcel of that is individuals, when they come into Jersey City, they should be making a requirement, a community obligation, a community contribution, whether it's on schools, whether it's infrastructure. But that is so critically important. And also, when you look at energy costs, we have to develop community engineering platform to save costs for Jersey City residents.
Christina?
A part of the issue that we have here in Jersey City with the infrastructure is that we have a lot of traffic that pass through our city. We have over 100,000 vehicles that pass through Jersey City on a daily basis. And a way to resolve that is by creating a toll system. I've done the layout and the map out. You can check out my website where I have about 5 or 6 points in which we can set up these toll systems. However, these toll systems wouldn't charge the people who work here in Jersey City or the residents here in Jersey City, and it will be a way to recoup some of the money for the damages that we as the taxpayers incur because of this excessive traffic that's traveling throughout here. That money can be used towards repairing a lot of the roadways, redoing some of the sewer systems, in addition to any other projects that we may want to pilot here in Jersey City. Thank you.
Bill?
So first and foremost, with every new development project, make sure that project addresses its infrastructure costs. And what's great about Aspire is Aspire allows you to roll into your total project cost the infrastructure cost, which allows you to get a tax credit that nets out to equal to 40% of the cost of that new sewer system, that new traffic signal, those new roads that have to be done. So as mayor, someone who knows and understands that process, will make sure that all of those systems come in, utilizing things like EIT, low interest, very low interest loans, spread out of over longer periods of time to make sure that infrastructure costs are done that way. Additionally, there's other 1% loan dollars that are out there. Those dollars need to be brought in. The bonding needs to be done. It's tough. Every big city has the same problem. The pipes are old. The pipes need to be replaced. You know why you drive around town and streets are closed everywhere? Because we're dealing with that problem on a day-to-day basis. But the dollars are there. The dollars are bondable. The bonds are extended over a long period of time. There should be master planning for that, and then accept that we're going to have to put up the dollars to do it. But what we got to make sure is that when we bond for infrastructure and don't bond for operating costs. One thing I guarantee you as mayor, you'll never see me ask the city government to bond for operating costs, because that's how you get your bond rating downgraded, and that's how you make your city go bankrupt.
Saab?
I think the point Bill made was well taken. But I want to talk a little bit about two things to give you a sense of the insider deals that happens here in New Jersey. One way that you don't fix your sewer system is by giving a 25-year contract to the water company to get an upfront payment for $25 million. Mm. That's exactly what the city of Jersey City did. They gave a back-end tax through your water and sewage bill while taking an upfront payment to plug an operating deficit. Right to the point that Bill's making, we are literally robbing Peter to pay Paul here. This is happening all the time in Jersey City. For those of you that have seen your electric bills skyrocketing, that is because there's an AI data center in New Jersey that is absorbing all this new energy, and we lost the lottery and are now paying for that. Again, these are insider deals that are taking place across New Jersey. And that is why we are so proud to be the only campaign not funded by city vendors or city contractors, not funded by the people who run the Port Authority, not funded by the Kushners, right? We are the only campaign that is independent and accountable only to you. The last point I want to make here, look, when it comes to infrastructure, this is a long-term project. It's about sustainability, and it isn't sexy, right? You guys don't get to see what happens in the sewer system. And so even if the mayor does a fantastic job, most of you will never get the mayor credit. But I think that's why you need someone who is thinking about the long-term vision of Jersey City, who is going to think about what are the investments we need to make, not just for the next 5 years, but for the next 50 years.
Well, another one of these questions that people don't like. Christine, we'll start with you. The property tax revaluation system in Jersey City is currently estimated to be 30 to 40% off, which means that most property owners who appeal their cases are winning, which undermines the system and creates instability in the marketplace. If elected, how will you fix the reval system to ensure fairness, accuracy, and long-term stability for businesses and residents alike?
Well, we will have to go in and reevaluate and also do audits to make sure that the information that's provided to these owners in regards to their taxes is accurate. Also, just educating, making sure that these property owners are educated about the processes and what exactly they should be expecting when that audit happens is another way to kind of soften the blow. It's something that has to happen. We can't avoid it. This is a part of the reason why we have the issues that we're having here in Jersey City in terms of our deficit. So, yeah, thank you.
Bill.
So there's a reason you do a reval every 10 years, right? Okay. The next reval's 2027. And I think we were at a prior forum where we all agreed. We were at a wedding. But we all agreed, so you got a free pass. We agreed that we will work to implement that reval. It's not fun, it's not sexy, and most mayors get kicked out of office after they do one. But it's got to be done because of what you just stated. So I think that's part one, preparing, being ready, getting the community ready, informing the community of that, but also making sure we bring in the best experts and best company to do the reval. Because other revals have been failed and flawed because they didn't bring in the right professionals, they didn't bring in the right staff people. But to your other point, Emery, the problem exists today. If somebody goes tomorrow and gets a site plan approval to build 100 units, the city assesses them the next day as if those 100 units were already built. Sometimes they assess it at higher than what it should pay. So what does that person do? That gives the city a short-term amount of dollars. That person files a tax appeal. Sometimes it takes 2 years for that appeal to be heard. They win probably a 70 or 80% reduction. And then we've got to pay them 2 years back. That's further exacerbating the short-term fiscal problems that we have. And what does the city do? They bond those appeals, which means that makes the problem even worse. No quick gimmicks and no fake over-assessments to give a short-term fix.
Do I get an extra 30 seconds because he called me out? No. It's a joke.
I felt bad.
No, it's okay. Listen, I'm committing to doing that reval. Sorry I wasn't here at the last one. But I think the most important thing for us to sort of remember here is that there are revals that have been canceled. And I'll do Bill one better. He talks about people who have built property plans and then built sites on it. There's a hotel in Jersey City that almost nearly bankrupted the city overnight because the city had evaluated it during the pandemic as if it had 100% occupancy. But guess what? During the entire pandemic, there was no occupancy. And now this hotel went, they won their property tax appeal, and we owed them.
No, he's a minute and a half.
You only wanted 30 seconds, yeah? Be careful what you wish for, young man.
I asked for an extra 30 seconds. It's okay. So going back to the hotel, so the hotel went and appealed, and we owed them $10 million in back taxes, right? So this is what it comes down to, right? And the city then goes and says, hey, we don't have this money. We've been, you know, expecting this money to be coming in. Nearly bankrupted us. And what did the city do? They bonded for that money. So again, we need to make sure that we have a plan in place that includes a four-year budget, that we are not just talking about what's happening in the short term, but we are talking about the long term of the city, and also making sure that homeowners are aware and ready, that they know, hey, the mayor is not going to come in 2027 and say, hey, I hate you, I'm going to raise your taxes. But this is a part of a process that is going to happen over and over again every 10 years to make sure that we are holding our city accountable and making sure the taxes are spread fairly across the city.
Thank you. Jim.
Yeah. It's a tough issue, but it's critically important. That reval goes to the heart of the integrity of the process and fairness. So yes, we all committed that we would move forward in 10 years, and then there are different incentives and there are different efforts now going on throughout the state of New Jersey, whether you could increase that, whether you could have rolling revalve, different models. One of the areas that I'm concerned, though, with is I want to make sure that homeowners and businesses are not penalized for upgrading or investing in their homes. One of the things that I think is particularly problematic is when a homeowner conscientiously invests in his or her home or business person, and then revalve comes along and they're punished significantly. So revalve, we all agree that it has to be done in a judicious and timely manner, but we also have to make sure that we have to protect the investment of those individuals, those homeowners and those businesses that are trying to upgrade the quality of their homes for the sake of themselves and the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, this question is for Bill. One of the chamber's goals is for residents to qualify for good local jobs. However, feedback is that our schools are not preparing them adequately. How can we work with our system to achieve greater success?
So I think we have good examples. I think County Prep prepares students. I think High Tech prepares students. And I think some of the programs in our existing high schools prepare students. I think our schools get a lot of bad knocks that aren't fair. I think that we need to expand a construction program like we currently have. The cosmetology program that has Lincoln High School has is very successful. But the bottom line is, and Musab came out with it, he didn't know that 20 years earlier I had done it on the county level, first source agreements. Every redevelopment agreement that Jersey City has on a project needs to require those developers, those builders, to hire Jersey City residents first. And once we know that those jobs have to go to Jersey City residents, then it's proper to get the workforce dollars from the Department of Labor, like I do at EDC, and prepare them for those jobs. And the workforce development programs that I administer include Hudson County. And that's how we get individuals into a variety of construction trades. Over 300 women and minority men have gotten into the construction trade unions from the programs that we have. We run a hospitality program. There's a lot of opportunities in the hospitality fields, whether they're hotels, whether they're restaurants, whether they're catering facilities. And you've got Landmark that does a great job on the ones that they have. Those are jobs that we can train people for, not just for jobs, for careers. First source, proper training, better programming in schools, that's how you get it done. And you should be a partner in that process.
Musab?
Look, I was a beneficiary of something called the Jersey City Summer Internship Program. It was a summer program where I got a paid internship at St. Peter's University when I was a junior in high school. That program put some of my friends at Goldman Sachs, some of them at JP Morgan, and sent them off to careers. I mean, imagine going into college having Goldman Sachs on your resume. But that program after the pandemic no longer existed. One of the things we want to do is we want to bring that back. There are so many businesses that are here in Jersey City. Like I mentioned, there are 99,000 people who are coming into Jersey City for work. There are so many businesses that exist in Jersey City that take advantage of the real estate that's here that should be throwing open their doors to provide opportunity to our young people. A lot of the students that actually go to our high schools, their senior year, actually have half days the entire year. They can actually spend half the day working at a company. Marilyn Roman, when she was around way back when as a superintendent, actually had the capacity to work with these companies to provide paid internships to students in high school. And so there are some students who are getting associate's degrees in our high schools. I know many people don't know that, but they are actually graduating from their four-year program with an associate's degree. But the alternative should be, if you don't want to get your 2 years of college, why don't you go and get a co-op? Go work at a company. Go work as an apprentice. Go work in construction. Right? Have the opportunity to have a good-paying job so the second you graduate from high school, you have options. You can go off to college and have the associate's degree and only do 2 years of four-year college, or you can go off and get a full-time job.
Jim?
Sure. To go to the heart of your question, it's not only having great schools and great high schools and great middle schools, no matter what zip code you live in, and that's so critically important. But on the specific question of how do we connect our young people to the trades, to jobs, when you look at what different states have done, say, for example, North Carolina and Governor Jim Hunt, they have a great program where they create a pipeline between development, schooling, hands-on work, and then ultimately employment. 3 weeks ago, we graduated New Jersey Reentry Corporation, 400 young men and women in 16 credentialed areas. And those, you were there, 16 credentialed areas. So that whether that was phlebotomy, we have the only court-involved program for women, phlebotomy, HVAC, welding, General Electric, et cetera. But the important point there is that if you give somebody skills, if you give somebody recognized skills that are in a state-certified program by the New Jersey Department of Labor or the United States Department of Labor, then they are able to transport those skills, and they're more marketable in the marketplace. And so then, in addition to that, we have to make sure that our young people have the skills necessary. But then we have to ask business to step up. And businesses have to step up as part of their community obligation. If they want any benefit from the city, they have to work cooperatively with employing young people from our community. Thank you.
Christina?
So I acquired my first job when I was 16 years old. I remember going down to City Hall for my working papers. But I also remember the process, how tedious that process was in terms of actually getting a job. My first job was at Burger King, and the only reason why I got that job was because someone pretty much put in a good word for me to get that job. It shouldn't be like that. I went to St. Anthony's High School, you know, back then there was a lot of resources that were available, but, you know, that transition from school into the workforce was not there. Moving forward to my current position as law enforcement, if it wasn't for an organization coming in, the PAL, and introducing law enforcement to me, I would have never even imagined a career in law enforcement today. So with that being stated, I know that there are programs within the schools. I think expanding on those programs and just connecting the dots to where these businesses that we have here in Jersey City engage with the students within that school to build that connection to where these students can easily transition from being students and actually into the workspace so that they can be able to make an income in addition to making sure that these businesses are fully staffed. Thank you.
Thank you. So starting the next round of questions with Musab. Data from December 2024 indicates that thefts increased 41%, aggravated assault was up 25%, stolen vehicles were up 28%, and criminal mischief was up 91% compared to the prior year. How will you address these safety concerns?
Yeah, I think it's great that we have statistics. Again, one of the things we need to make sure is that all the statistics are posted online and that the mayor is held accountable, right? We need to make sure that there's real data that's available every single month so you can see the actual crime data that's happening. But I think there's, you know, a reshuffling that has to happen in the police department. If you look at the amount of police overtime that's being spent, with that amount of money, you can hire more police officers to actually do their job. And instead of having police officers respond to mental health crises, you can hire mental health responders to deal with those crises. You should have police officers doing the thing that they're trained to do and have mental health responders responding to things that they're meant to do. But I think larger than this is making sure that our community feels safe. That also means, as you think about the recent ICE raids that have been happening all across the country, we need to make sure that our undocumented population knows that there is going to be a mayor in City Hall who's going to have their back, that makes sure if they're calling 911, it's not going to lead to them being deported. We had an incident that happened here in the Heights in Jersey City. And there are some people on the stage that have not called it out, that are not talking about what's going on. And so I think it's important that we make sure our values are represented in City Hall, that there is someone who is fighting for the same things that you care about.
Jim.
You know, when I was walking door to door, I came across an elderly woman who literally had a bullet hole through her front window. And she had called the police department, and she was an elder, someone prominent in her church, and she called the police department. Police department came, and she had a drug dealer to her right and a drug dealer living to her left. And the police confronted, and subsequently what happened is she had all four of her tires slashed, and she had epitaphs written all over her door about die, die, die. And I was so depressed that, you know, my family's from, my mom was from Clark Street, and we were Arlington Avenue, and my dad was Lafayette, and I was so depressed that this was happening in Jersey City. We need a police department that's irrevocably committed to keeping people safe, wherever they are in the community. And part of that is, and it's not only in terms of, you know, I was in areas of Jersey City where there's dog feces all over the street, all over the sidewalk, and people call health department and people call police department, and literally nobody responds. We need a fundamental change in policing in Jersey City that understands the importance of supporting our neighborhoods. I'm sorry.
Christina.
I would agree that police officers take on many hats that we shouldn't necessarily take on. The answer isn't necessarily flooding the streets with more police in a sense, just because of what's going on currently, you know, with ICE. Some people don't necessarily know the difference. I think we can get back to utilizing the community. I remember once upon a time there was a program called the Neighborhood Watch, allowing them to connect with the captains within their local districts so that they can come up with a game plan that's best suited for that community, their community. Police can't be everywhere all the time. As much as people think, you know, that they can, unfortunately, that's not the case here. Resources, making sure that the proper resources are available. People who are in mental health crises, making sure that the medical center is being dispatched out and social workers are being assigned. I know that we recently launched a program that's called the ARRIVE Team, to where police officers are dispatched out with social workers from the medical center. It's a start. It's something that I'm looking to expand on so that we can be safe. Thank you.
Bill.
So ARRIVE Together needs to be 24/7. You don't have it two nights a week. You got to have it 24/7. I'll do that day one, because mental health problems occur all the time. And I'll also make sure we have a de-escalation center. We already have the location, Oak Street and MLK. We already have the Qualified Federal Health Center and the Anti-Violence Coalition. All we got to do is get the $500,000 to fit out and renovate the facility to open up. We're going to start a mental health court within the next 90 days in Hudson County, because a lot of folks that are simply shoplifters that wind up in our jail, crowd our jails, don't get any help in our jail because they have mental health conditions. But when I was a councilman, we adopted a minimum policing ordinance. What the hell happened to the ordinance? Are we complying with it? Well, I'll comply with it as soon as I get in and as soon as I can get enough officers clear to go to the academy. There's a reason why we have minimum policing. There's a reason why we need minimum policing. But let's not forget there are underlying conditions. We talked about the need for jobs and employment. If we don't address that, crime will still occur. If we don't address mental health issues, crime is still going to occur. So we need to have our officers. We need to staff our officers. And you know what? When I was a councilman, a businessman was murdered, a liquor store owner, and we did neighborhood watch. We jumped in vehicles. We did citizens on patrol. We rode around the neighborhood for 6 months, calling in on walkie-talkies so you could figure out how long ago it was until that community felt safe again. Those are the kind of actions I'm
The question is for Jim. Jersey City's next administration is likely to face a divided government with no single slate holding all the council seats and potentially a Republican governor. How do you plan to collaborate effectively with those who may not share your political platform or priorities? And what strategies will you use to prevent gridlock while still delivering results for businesses and residents?
Great question. You know, I think few of us have ever seen our nation more divided. For me, you know, when I was young elected official and when I was mayor of Woodbridge, I was the Democratic mayor and I had a majority Republican council. And consistently what I tried to do is to go back to what are those basic values? What are those tasks? What are those objectives that we all share and that we all agree to? And so whether it's public safety, whether it's education, whether it's controlling taxes, whether it's safe and clean streets, go back to the mission. And being mission-driven is so critically important because those are areas where people can have agreement. And in terms of the governor's office, whether it be a Democrat or a Republican governor, part of that is also, and we talked about this in the context of taxes, you know, if we want to control taxes in Jersey City, we have to go after every single bloody DOT grant program for streets. We have to go after every program for mental health, for education. And so my responsibility as mayor is to assiduously pursue all state and federal funding, whether it's on policing, whether it's on education, whether it's in healthcare, which I think is going to be critically important. And lastly, I think with what President Trump did on the big bill, that's going to have a profound impact on our healthcare, particularly among our poorest residents, and that's a particularly.
Christina?
We as a people have to come together during this time. We need each other now more than ever. With the federal government, there's a lot of resources that are being cut, and the working class are being squeezed, the businesses are being squeezed. So In this time, we have to learn to agree to disagree. Your viewpoints should not necessarily affect my way of life or quality of life and vice versa. The organizations here in Jersey City, to just support them so that they can be able to provide the services to the community. Again, we need a lot of things here, and part of the issue is there is a lack of resources. There's a lack of rental assistance. There's a lack of, you know, just places, safe places for people to go, in addition to just mental health and just somewhere to just have groceries. There are people out here that can't even afford groceries. So we as a city have to come together and make it our mission to support one another during this time until we can pass this moment up. Thank you.
Bill?
I'll try to stick to the question. You asked, what are we going to do with a divided government? I've spent my life in divided government. I've been the only person that votes against many things on a county level. When I was a councilman, I often stood up and fought against the administration. But 35 years of a legislative experience taught me one thing. If you don't make people part of the solution, you force them to be part of the problem. So decisions that are made collectively. We put people in a room, and I may want this, they may want that, and at the end of the day, we have to meet somewhere in the middle. That's how you have to govern. That's often how you have to govern. And in county government, I've been successful in getting the county government to do that on projects like I spoke about with the Guarini Center, when we made sure that 10% of those contracts went to Jersey City based minority and women-owned businesses. So how do you govern? You govern the way you've learned for 35 years. I've been an outsider. I've been an independent. So I'm going to respect those individuals that may not have run with me and make them an equal part of government. And I put a team together, and I see on other teams, respect their expertise. If a person has expertise in education, then bring them in and ask for their opinion and their input. Public safety, youth services, whatever those are. So I think having a government with multiple is important. We got a Republican governor in the state of New Jersey. With the debacle with Trump on the federal level, we're going to have our hands full, and we're going to have to stand together.
Musab?
Look, when I got elected to office when I was 20 years old, I didn't come in with any political ties. I came in as an independent. And when I became the board president in the middle of the pandemic, it was not because there was a special interest that was supporting me. In fact, the teachers union actually supported my opponent during that presidential election. But the reason that I was elected was because the people on my school board, who were much older than I was, understood one thing, and that was my priority was the students of Jersey City. I have a theory that I believe those closest to the pain should be closest to the power, and that is the way that I govern. I believe in collective governance where I bring people together. When we had to renegotiate our teachers union contract in the middle of the pandemic, I remember getting approval from the board, and I went to the teachers union, and they asked me to put the money towards the top of the guide, the teachers that had been there the longest. And I understand, I respect those teachers that have been there. But I said to them, the teachers at the bottom are suffering the most, and we need to increase their minimum wage. And so we increased their minimum wage from $54,000 all the way up to $61,000. Now, I want to make a point here. Jim talked about the Trump administration. The Trump administration just passed the largest wealth transfer in this nation's history, from the poor to the rich. And I want to make sure that all of you know my values. That my value is somebody who will not capitulate to the Trump administration and someone that's going to have the best interests of every Jersey City resident. That's why I don't take the money from the same people who fund the Trump administration. The same MAGA billionaires are not funding my campaign that are funding some of the other campaigns that are here.
Well, thank you. That concludes our questions for tonight. Each candidate will be given a two-minute statement, and feel free to clap at the end. By random draw, we will start with Musab Ali.
So I want to thank everyone for being here. You know, look, they say it takes a village to raise a child, and you are that village, and I feel like your child. You know, I grew up in the city. I was elected by this city, and I got to give back. On 9/11, my dad had a job at Newark Airport. On September 12th, he lost that job because his name was Muhammad. And so I grew up wondering what my place was in this country. And I remember in 2016, Trump has a quote about Jersey City. He says, "I remember watching in Jersey City where thousands of people were celebrating on rooftops during 9/11. 1 year later, you elected me as the first Muslim ever elected in the city's history." And I respect that so much because it says something about this city. And it's the fact that this is a city where people stand up and they fight back. And our campaign is about sharing a vision of making the city more affordable. We've talked about building more housing and more affordable housing, a fast and free bus system, banning broker fees, making it easier for businesses to be here. But the one thing that I appreciate the most about this campaign is it's a campaign about joy. And I just want to share a quick story. I was canvassing the other day, and an 18-year-old walked up to me, and he said, "Musab, it was just my birthday, and I want you to know I registered to vote for you." And I walked down the street, and there was a kid who was on FaceTime with his friends. And I stopped him. He was pretty young. And I was talking about our campaign. I said, "Look, we're trying to lower the rent. We're trying to build a fast and free bus system." And his two friends on FaceTime stopped him and said, "Is that Musab Ali? Can I get a photo with him?" And they were all 22 years old. And then I walked to the end of the street, and I talked to a senior who was so excited about seeing new, fresh ideas. And then there was these two boys on their bikes. One was 12 and one was 13. And I shared my card with them. And the 12-year-old said to me, he said, "Musab, I already told both my parents they have to vote for you." And the 13-year-old said, "Musab, my dad became a citizen last week. And I said to him, I was so jealous that his first official vote gets to be for you." That is the kind of campaign we're building. Thank you.
Jim?
The issues that are before Jersey City are profound. We've got a $700 million municipal budget. We have a $1.1 billion school budget. We have red flags all across audits. We have a school system, frankly, with great teachers, but we should be doing so much better for how much money we invest in our children. Children, wherever they live, should be entitled to a great education. We had some of the highest property tax increases in the state for various reasons. And then in addition to that, we have an aging infrastructure. We have e-bikes that are bordering on pandemonium. We have real problems. And what I'm committing to you is, at this point in my life, you know, I've run for political office, I've done it. What I want to do is fix things. At the end of the day, it's not just about the fight. It's about how we materially improve the quality of life for Jersey City families. At the end of the day, are we making their children more successful in school? Are we ensuring that somebody's grandmother is safe? Are we ensuring that the sewer is operating properly? Are we ensuring that 911 is responding in a timely manner? A lot of this stuff isn't attractive, but it's about being hands-on and being disciplined. And one of the few virtues I have is that I work hard and that I've walked the entirety of the city block by block, as many others have. But what I see right now, what I feel in people's bones, is that people want the city to work. They feel that the city is not moving in the right direction and that this next mayor, we're either going to get the city to work or we're going to be on the precipice. And this isn't about any individual here. It's about all of us. And respectfully,
Christina.
I envision a Jersey City where opportunity is within reach of everyone. As mayor, I will prioritize smart, inclusive economic growth that makes our city not only sustainable, but equitable and responsive to the people who call it home. I acknowledge that the previous administration have fallen short by not placing local businesses and residents first when making their decisions. I know what it means to have a vision and bring it to life. One that not only provides for my family, but also strengthens the bonds of the community. My commitment is to ensure that every resident, every small business, and every neighborhood has the resources and tools to thrive. Because I know when we invest in our people and our local economy, we build a stronger, safer Jersey City. On November 4th, you have the opportunity to change history and also make history. My name is Christina Freeman, and I thank you for this opportunity, and I thank you for the opportunity to stand up for Jersey City. If you don't know much about my platform, please be sure to visit my website at freeman2025.vote. Thank you.
Bill?
Hands-on isn't election time. It's all the time. Walking the streets isn't election time. It's all the time. And I've been doing it for 40 years. And I'll continue to do it as the mayor. One of the reasons I want to move City Hall or open a second mayor's office at the Hub, it's only 7 blocks from where I live. So those 3 days a week, people could stop me on the street as I walk to work. But seriously, like I said earlier, right now today, there's a young man, and hopefully by the end of this week, we get him into a real housing unit, who's literally staying in our office on JFK Boulevard, because that's hands-on, because I can't let that individual be on the street. And when on a Saturday night someone calls me, like Riaz Wiad has on numerous occasions, and tells me that there's a woman with a child on Bergen Avenue with nowhere to go, I make sure that we find a hotel room and, if necessary, drive her myself or get someone to drive her there. That's the kind of mayor that Jersey City needs. That's the kind of mayor that Jersey City deserves. We all care, but you got to have a mayor who cares all the time, every day. Walk the streets, be hands-on. I know how to fix problems. I know how to solve problems. When I ask you for your vote, judge me by what I've done. Judge me what I've done with affordable housing, what I've done with grants and loans to small businesses. Judge me by starting a step-down unit when COVID hit that saved thousands of lives by opening up beds in a hospital. Judge me by Lincoln Park and what we've done in that park and how I'm going to make every park in Jersey City look just like that. And when the people that keep it clean, I say thank you to those workers. And when they don't, I call them out publicly. You need a mayor who's there all the time, not at this level at election time and who knows where the rest of the time. I'm going to be at this level for you 24/7 from day one. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our candidates tonight who have participated with us. Showing up for the business community and the nonprofit communities at the Hudson County Chamber of Commerce represents is really crucial, important, and we value those who showed up tonight. We appreciate it. Thank you for your willingness also to stand up and serve Jersey City at this critical time. Participation in all Hudson Chamber events is open to everyone. We hope you'll all participate. For more things going on, check out our website at hudsonchamber.org to stay connected. And while new leadership is coming to Jersey City, it is important to be informed. However, it's even more important to vote. Election day is Tuesday, November the 4th. We encourage each of you to make your voice heard. Thank you, and have a safe ride home. Thank you.